Coming up on today's episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast.
I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, so that makes me like most Floridians. I'm from Ohio.
Right. I've been finding that out lately. From Anthony Bourdain from Parts Unknown in 2015. He said, "It's really a lot like writing porn. After you've used the same adjectives over and over again, it's like the penthouse letters."
Yeah.
However, Chris, you did use the word monomaniacal in the second paragraph of the Golden Spoon Award, so I think you're probably still okay with adjectives.
Yeah. But in restaurants, people are driven to, in a way, serve others. They want to, guy told me, he said, it's what we do. We make eating fun for people. And really, today, if you're going to be in a kitchen, you know, it's like covering baseball, you better speak Spanish.
Right. And, exactly.
And not to give people orders, but to listen.
Coming to you from St. Petersburg, Florida, you're listening to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the show that's the authority on where to eat in St. Pete. Here are your hosts, Kevin Godby and Lori Brown.
Hi, I'm Kevin Godby.
And I'm Lori Brown. Thank you for tuning in today.
Welcome to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the podcast that's it when it comes to restaurants and food information in St. Pete.
And be sure to check out our website, stpetersburgfoodies.com. There you'll find great information, including restaurant reviews, the largest St. Pete happy hour list ever created and kept updated, and information on the newest restaurants in town. We are locals that live in downtown St. Pete, and we've been eating our way through this town for years, so you don't have to, but you should.
We have a new episode every Tuesday. Just hit the subscribe button and you'll get notified when an episode is ready for download. And then you can listen to them anytime you want, like on your morning jog or commute to work.
On today's show, our featured guest is the food editor for Florida Trends magazine, Chris Sherman.
Chris decides the Golden Spoon Awards for Florida Trends, which covers the entire state of Florida.
After Chris, we stroll over to Greenstock, our favorite salad place for lunch.
We have a great show, so stick around. Hey, Lori, have you ever been to Noble Crust?
I have.
What do you like there?
Pork belly, pimento cheese, and fried green tomatoes are my favorite.
Oh, yeah, I love that one, too. They actually call it the FGBLT. It's fried green tomatoes, pork belly glazed with a Tabasco honey sauce and pimento cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first item on the menu, so you can't miss it. And I think they should actually call it the OMG.
Yeah, you've said that before. The chicken marsala is really good, too. It has chicken and chicken sausage, crimini mushrooms, and four cheese grits. It's so delicious.
I love that they mix classics from the American Deep South and Italy. Noble Crust is famous for their fried chicken.
I love it.
Yeah, and the eggplant parmesan is out of this world. When we do a best eggplant parm list, it'll definitely be on there.
Yes, it will.
Speaking of lists, Noble Crust made six of them recently. Best Italian, Best Casual Dining, Best Pizza, Best Bloody Marys, Best Meatballs, and, believe it or not, Best Salads.
Ooh, can I tell you another one of my favorite items?
Yeah.
The spaghetti and meatballs. It's so good.
Man, you're not kidding. You know what? They have a brunch on Saturdays and Sundays starting at 10:30, which I love. And the deviled eggs are to die for.
Let's go to Noble Crust right now.
I'm in. Let's do it. One of our favorite places to go eat in St. Pete is Engine No. 9. They've been a staple in downtown St. Pete coming up on 7 years, and they are famous for their unique and tasty burger creations. As a matter of fact, they are on the St. Pete Foodies list of best burgers in St. Pete. They also made the best hot dogs list, the best chilies, and the best wings in St. Pete. Aside from the food, Engine No. 9 is a great sports bar with lots of TVs, beer, and wine. And you can even get a regular old cheeseburger, too, so you can bring your non-adventurous eater friends. Check out Engine No. 9 at the corner of MLK and First Avenue North in downtown St. Pete. Their burgers can't be beat. Please welcome Florida Trend restaurant editor, Chris Sherman. Welcome, Chris.
Yes, welcome, Chris.
Glad to be here with both of you.
You have been a food journalist for pretty much most of your adult life.
Absolutely true.
So you're pretty sure that is what you want to do?
I don't know. I'm still looking at some new ideas. Yeah. Possibly I'll be a highlight player.
There you go. So just for our listeners, you have won numerous awards from the Association of Food Journalists and other organizations. You were a finalist in food criticism at the James Beard as a James Beard competition nominee. You've been a member of the nominating panels for James Beard and the Slow Food Movement.
Yes.
And not only are you a lifelong food journalist, you've also covered as a journalist murder trials, politics, country music, architecture, black history, and that's for different newspapers and magazines in Washington, New York, Louisiana, and North Carolina.
Yeah, wow. And I actually did a bit of foreign correspondence. I was the reporter for the smallest newspaper that covered the war in El Salvador. And then recently I did, the last Mexican elections back in, about 6 years ago.
Wow. Wow.
Do you have a clone that I don't know about? I don't know how you do all that.
And right now I'm doing a bunch of things, but in addition to Trend, I've been a book publisher, and I've been in the wine trade, and right now I'm toying with a novel, and other than that, I probably need to clean out the garage where I have huge maps and old board games.
That's pretty cool. Are you a board game aficionado?
Collector?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm more interested in the printing, and particularly the old lithograph prints in the U.S. and abroad. I'm just fascinated by the idea of the games and the game construction. And as far as playing, it's only been recently that people have gone back to some form of board playing. I mean, there was so much online virtual gaming, which was all pretty cool, but a little bit more complicated than I could manage.
Right.
So where were you from originally, Chris?
I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So that makes me like most Floridians. I'm from Ohio.
Right. I've been finding that out lately. There's a lot of Floridians from Ohio and other parts of the Midwest.
Yes. Yeah.
On this coast, Ohio and Michigan cover most of it. And one of the good things about my job over the years is that just in Florida, I've been able to get lost in all parts of the Tampa Bay region and much of the state. So I've found, you know, where the Czechs live, where the Finns settled, the wide variety of people who are here in what looks like white bread country.
Right. Yeah, it kind of does, but it is, I guess it is kind of somewhat of a hidden melting pot, I guess.
Yeah. There's a big Ukrainian population that you can find in the north part of the Tampa Bay region, but mostly down south, closer to Naples. And if you want pierogies, get down there and Lent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There you go.
Thanks for the tip. I love pierogies.
So what led you down this line of work?
Well, I was a traditional newspaper reporter and editor until probably, I went to Louisiana and I was working for the smaller newspaper in town. And the bigger newspaper had a restaurant columnist called the Hungry Reporter, My actual job was laying out the front page and doing some foreign writing. And so I became the well-fed reporter. And after that, I sort of decided that I didn't like editing, but maybe I could find work just writing about food. And with that, I went to the Orlando Sentinel, and I became the food writer, restaurant critic, and wine columnist.
Nice. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. And from there, I came 4 years later, I saw that the St. Pete Times had an opening, so I came over here.
Yeah, and so you were at the St. Pete Times starting in 1988, correct?
That sounds right, because I was there for just shy of 20 years.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, you left in 2006, and that was the St. Pete Times, which is now the Tampa Bay Times, I think. Is that since maybe 2010 or 2011?
Does something like that. Change that?
It may have been during the transition to the Tampa Bay Times.
Right.
But yeah, most of it was under the St. Pete Times flag. Yeah.
I just remember that I moved to St. Pete in early 2009, and at that time it was still the St. Pete Times. And I remember soon after I moved here, they changed it to Tampa Bay Times.
Yeah.
And then Florida Trend, which you currently edit and write for, is also owned by the Tampa Bay Times.
It is indeed. At one time, the St. Pete Times owned a little chainlet of magazines. There was Georgia Trend and Arizona Trend.
Oh, cool.
Florida Trend has been around for 50 years, and for about at least 35 years, they had restaurant coverage. I think the principle was that if they were writing for Florida executives, so to speak, that somebody in Tampa wouldn't know where to go in Orlando or in Palm Beach. So, mm-hmm. so that was their thinking, and we've kept it up with the Golden Spoons, which I'm working on right now, trying to assess probably the top 150, 200 restaurants in
Florida.
Wow. Wow. That's right.
So I guess, is that like pretty much a whole year project?
Well, I have to keep my eyes and ears open for a whole year.
Yeah, that's right. A big job. I mean, I have to admit, we struggle trying to cover everything just in St. Petersburg and surrounding area. And we include St. Pete Beach and a couple of surrounding areas. But for the whole state, wow.
Yeah, that's a big, heavy job. And it's got to be really difficult during this time because there's a lot of restaurants, unfortunately, going out of business, I'm sure.
Yeah, trying to keep things up to date. Yeah, it's hard.
Well, somehow it's turned out that I went through the list and only about four or five of the restaurants had closed up. Another five or six were just doing takeout. But either I've been a brilliant seer into the future, or just that I think the really good restaurants, and I don't mean just in terms of quality, but those that have been around, those that have some resources to fall back on,
right,
have survived. But it is really tough out there, and a lot of good restaurants are probably not going to make it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but
it is.
Hoping for the best. And, you know, I mentioned before that, you know, you were at St. Pete Times. That was 17 years. And in total, you've been a food journalist for 31 years. And in my process of researching you, I saw that you, a while back, 18 years ago, you interviewed Anthony Bourdain. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But it also made me think of a quote from him when I'm looking at how long you've been doing this. And now I've only been writing professionally as a food writer, and I'm not comparing myself to you, but in only 4 years, I can already relate to this quote from Anthony Bourdain from Parts Unknown in 2015. He said, "It's really a lot like writing porn. After you've used the same adjectives over and over again, it's like the penthouse letters."
Yeah.
However, Chris, you did use the word monomaniacal in the second paragraph of the Golden Spoon Award, so I think you're probably still okay with adjectives.
Yeah. That's what most porn is about.
Yeah, we just do food porn.
Yeah. The main question for most food writers, other than those who are just pursuing it to write it up as you know, pornographic sensuality, is that in any town or any market, you know, after 2 or 3 years, you've done most of what there is to do. So it's helpful if you can find a way to get out beyond that. And actually, a lot of food critics don't last more than 3 or 4 years in any one town, and then they're off exploring or they're working someplace 500 miles away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And is that just because you run out of restaurants, or everybody knows you and it's difficult to be anonymous?
Well, it's mostly that you've run out of restaurants. I mean, that there are, I mean, in the old days, there might be 4 or 5 good new restaurants in a year. I mean, now, you know, it's more like 15 or 20, but after a while, you've pretty much run the gamut. But restaurants do keep cropping up. I just did a piece for Trend on restaurants that have opened during the pandemic. So
yeah,
right.
Wow.
Right.
There's a certain amount of optimism or craziness in the business.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that I learned, I love psychology and have read several books on it. And one of the things I learned is that optimism is like required for human existence. I can't remember how to explain it well, but anyway, yeah, the optimism, craziness, whatever you want to call it, to stay sane and stay alive, you need a little bit of that. But yeah, it is amazing though how new places are opening during
this
time.
And the good thing about optimism in the restaurant business is that you can be optimistic about various trades or crafts. You know, maybe you want to help people or maybe you just want to make lots of money. But in restaurants, people are driven to, in a way, serve others. They want to, guy told me, he said, it's what we do. We make eating fun for people.
Right.
Right. Yeah,
and
I'm sure.
You have to be driven by, in the old sense of the word, hospitality. You really mm-hmm. want to be hospitable to people. You want to welcome people and feed them. It's like being an innkeeper or a publican. And I think it's always an important sign of a restaurant or a restaurateur that they are basically generous.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot too, just going right along with what you were saying. I've so frequently heard or read about different restaurateurs and chefs saying that some of the most satisfying parts of it are just feeding people, making people happy with their food.
Right. Seeing their expressions.
I mean, there's a sense that the manager, the chef, walks around the restaurant occasionally to be praised, but they also, they really enjoy seeing people having a good time.
Right.
Yep, exactly.
Right.
That they obviously contributed to.
Exactly.
Exactly, right.
And Chris, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we got lots of really good stuff to talk about. Ramen is the ultimate comfort food, and Buya Ramen on the 900 block of Central Avenue is my go-to. It's so freaking good. The broth is like a silky blanket to warm up your mouth, and the hearty proteins, or just mushrooms for vegetarians, it'll have you saying, "Ooh, mommy, the umami is making my eyes roll back in my head." My favorites are the pork belly and the short rib. Mmm. And then there's the noodles. O-M-G. Go get the best ramen in St. Pete at Buya Ramen at 911 Central Avenue in the Edge District of downtown St. Pete.
Do ya, Buya? Hey, foodies. Do you know about the Zest podcast? If you're listening to us, you should be listening to them too.
They're part of the Tampa NPR station WUSF 89.7. On The Zest, you'll learn new recipes, baking tips, and barbecue secrets. You'll hear about what's ripe, what's growing, and what's in season.
The Zest podcast is hosted by Robin Sussingham, an award-winning reporter and producer who's also an avid home cook and baker. Robin's a native Floridian and has been searching out flavors and the fascinating stories behind them from Key West to Pensacola.
Learning to care for a sourdough starter and learning to bake sourdough breads really speaks to people in a very deep way. It's part of our collective history, and we're getting back to our roots and our self-sufficiency.
Just like us, The Zest podcast does interviews with chefs and restaurateurs and talks about food and recipes covering the Tampa Bay area and throughout Florida.
It's what we listen to when we're not doing our own show. Check out The Zest podcast at thezestpodcast.com.
We are back! We are back!
And we are back with Chris Sherman, the restaurant editor of Florida Trend magazine and of the Golden Spoon Awards that's published every year. And we're going to get into that and more of that in a moment. You also have, you've authored a couple of books and co-authored one. There's The Buzz on Wine from 2000, Florida Eats, I think I wrote the wrong date. I put 1987.
That was in Orlando. I'm not sure when that was, but
yeah. My notes say 1987, but I'm not sure if that's correct or not. But, and then you co-authored a book, Burns, Rare and Well Done, along with Christina Laxer and David Laxer, the inside story of Tampa's iconic Burns Steakhouse, along with recipes. And that's from 2015. Now, I've not had a chance to see the book, so what part did you have in that?
Well, we have a book publishing company in Winter Park, and we've done books for Bella's, for Mazzaro's, First Watch.
Oh, cool. You did the Mazzaro's book?
I have the Mazzaro's book. That's a great book. It's beautiful.
To some degree, there's a bit of pornography. The food looks beautiful. In fact, we did a book for Four Rivers Barbecue, and my wife, who is not a barbecue fan, thought it was absolutely gorgeous to look at, and that's meat porn. But with Burns, I was able to sit down with Gert Laxer and with David and Christina, and I knew Burn when he was still alive, and then I talked to everybody in the kitchen, most of the waiters, and it's really just quite an organization. They have a system of ranking the waiters up from beginning on up to captain, and I was able to sit in one evening after business was closed and listen as the waiter captains interviewed or tested a young guy for an hour before they agreed that he could wear the golden tie, which, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah, so I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
So how do they determine the hierarchy of waiters? Do they have to, they are passing tests or showing skills or some certification?
They start out as, I don't know what the term is, but the trainees, and they just mop the floors and conduct mm-hmm. some of the tours of the kitchen. Then if they graduate to bar server, they tend the best 10 bar and some wait in the lounge area. Then it goes up to a gray tie, a red tie, and a gold tie. And each of these
that's pretty cool.
is a decision by the top two maitre d's, the executive chef, and a couple of the senior waiters.
Wow, that's really cool.
That's very interesting. Yeah. And that ties in nicely with, I wanted to mention that 18 years ago, back in 2002, you interviewed Anthony Bourdain, and that was in the St. Pete Times, March 20th, 2002. Blood, Sweat, and Spices, an interview with Anthony Bourdain. And you did that at La Teresita's lunch counter, which is still open in Tampa, Cuban cuisine.
I've eaten there many times. It's amazing.
And he was on a book tour and you were interviewing him. And obviously people can Google and find to read it, but I did want to mention a couple of things. And one, I didn't even have highlighted, but I remember it from what you were just saying when you were talking about the hierarchy of waiters at Burns. Anthony Bourdain, in your interview, said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing because I couldn't find the exact paragraph right now, but he said, yeah, you can go to culinary school, but if you really want to learn, get a job as a dishwasher for a couple of weeks and see what really happens in the kitchen, to see what the chef really has to do, like clean out the grease trap.
Right.
But also there's just three paragraphs I did want to read from your interview with Anthony Bourdain. The great cooking of the world, what he calls the mama cuisines, are those that use everything and waste no part of the animals, fish, or crops. One reason he delights in the odd and the awful. Here we eat the chicken breast and throw the rest away, Bourdain says. The economy and efficiency of peasant life eventually led to what we now regard as fine cuisine. Pâtés, mousses, terrines, good stocks, dishes like sweetbreads, all came from a reluctance to waste. Any sophisticated culture, he says, eats fish heads. And many traditional cuisines include an unembarrassed carnivorousness that he delights in throwing up to vegetarians. Animals were hurt and killed in the making of this show, he says. That was one of my favorite points.
Absolutely. And take chicken. One of the hot things right now is not chicken breasts or chicken wings, but chicken thighs. I mean, there are dozens of restaurants that smoke thighs or whatever. And my personal favorite, I've gone beyond thighs to backs. I think the back is a neglected delicacy. But yeah, absolutely. People couldn't afford to throw away any part of the animal, which is why we have now the whole animal snout to tail butchery that's popular in a number of cities. We've got one guy here at Boozy Pig in Tampa who specializes in that. But sure, and you look at any good fish recipe, stew or whatever, starts out with fish bones.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I remember talking to, I think it was John Folsey, the chef from New Orleans, but he had traveled around the world doing a lot of demonstrations. And I said, well, which chefs impress you the most? And he said, the Russians. And I said, huh? And he said, yeah. He said, they've only got one thing to work with, a sturgeon. And And they managed to get so much out of it. So, yeah, and Bourdain, I think, is absolutely right as far as training for chefs, and really even training for food writers, is that I think you need to start at the lowest level, and if you think you want to be a chef, you need to see the work that goes into it, and it is cleaning out the grease trap or having your head under the Sub-Zero trying to fix the computer panel.
Right. Yeah, I know, I won't mention any names or places, but I know a chef that had to fix the toilet up during his shift.
That's right.
They're really sort of the equivalent of farmers. I mean, a farmer, you know, does wonderful things with nature, but farmers also have to be able to fix their tractor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Bourdain loved La Terracita, and it's one of those things we used to talk about. Well, a lot of chefs came through, but if you had somebody you really cared about, where would you take them? You know, mm-hmm. can't always go all the way out to Brocato's, but Ted Peters was obviously a big favorite, and they're still at it.
They are.
Yeah, I love it how you can smell the smoke from Ted Peters when you're like still like 1,000 feet away still.
sell the sizzle.
Sell the sizzle, yeah. Right.
So we did mention that you've been doing this for a long time. And what are some of the biggest changes you've seen to food writing, the food scene, and the American palate over the past decades? And are they good changes or bad changes?
In your opinion.
Yes.
Well, you're not talking about the new Philly cheesesteak potato chips from Lay's, are you?
No, I didn't even know about that. That might be one of the bad changes. I'm not sure. It might be.
Well, I think in the last 30 or 40 years, the way I see it, the American palate has grown immensely. I think probably one of the biggest changes in my life has been that calamari is now a staple. I mean, the kids are eating squid. I mean,
right.
But I think we've learned the presentation and the joy of real fresh ingredients from the Japanese. I think the Mexicans have taught us wonderful ways to play with food. I mean, how you can fold a tortilla seven different ways and make seven different dishes. And the Italians, of course, have taught us the value of really slow food, slow cooking, which our parents and grandparents knew, but we didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And today, thanks to immigration and travel, we eat food from everywhere, and tacos have been a mainstay for 40 years, and they're now having a new moment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think there's, to me, the best thing that's happened in restaurants and has not really quite broken into home cooking, but we're working on it, is vegetables. I mean, that's always been, to me, the sign of a great restaurant. And for years, the people who did the mobile five-star, like, to be a five-star restaurant, you had to have many things, but one of them was distinctive side elements to every entree. And now we've learned about parsnips, about Brussels sprouts, about bok choy, And the one of the stars on modern menus is carrots.
I know. Yeah. All different colored ones.
in last year's Golden Spoon Awards, you said the comeback vegetable of the year, the carrot, roasted, charred, or sauced with brown butter.
Yeah. And
it definitely is.
Cauliflower's had its moment, but it's coming back. And really, this has always been true that for a vegetarian, you got the best vegetables at really the most expensive restaurants, which were not vegetarian at all. But if you asked the chef to make a vegetable plate, they had good vegetables. And that's certainly much more common today. I mean, I see vegan dishes as well as vegetarian dishes on almost every good menu.
Right, right, for sure.
Yeah, interestingly, you made me think too when you were talking about the Mexican food. Also in your interview with Anthony Bourdain, he said something to the effect that the best chefs come from Mexico. That probably pissed off some French people.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, I know of no really good chef who doesn't talk to, listen, and take advice from the guys in the kitchen. In many cases,
right,
dishwashers, and say, well, how did your mama make it? Mm-hmm. And and really today, if you're going to be in a kitchen, you know, it's like covering baseball, you better speak Spanish.
Right. And, exactly.
And not to give people orders, but to listen. And you'll see in almost any restaurant today, Italian, French, whatever, the guys in the kitchen are Mexican. And mm-hmm. and they have now moved on to the point where, you know, they're now managing and starting their own restaurants. And I think
they start at the bottom and came up the ladder.
And I think it's unfortunate that we haven't had that much luck, a similar degree with all minorities. Some minorities still regarded as low class work, but it's good work, and it's and like you say, plenty of people have gone to the top from there. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, no conversation would be complete with you without talking about the Golden Spoon Awards, and as far as I know, it's probably one of the biggest restaurant awards, as it covers the entire state with multiple categories. And you know, we've talked about a renaissance of restaurants in St. Pete, and one takeaway I got from your write-up on Golden Spoons at the end of 2019 was you're saying pretty much the same thing about Florida overall, really.
Yes. I think really some of the most exciting, innovative cuisine is from Jacksonville all the way across the Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
We just recently went to Jacksonville last year, and we were so surprised.
Yeah, it was actually last year in August, I think.
Yeah,
we went to Jacksonville, and we're like, wow, we had no idea we were in for such a foodie restaurant
treat.
Yeah,
but St. Pete has grown marvelously. And the problem with the Golden Spoons is I can't pick more than four or five restaurants from any one city. It's not like this is a list of all the great restaurants to eat in that town, or right. This is just all the expensive restaurants in that town. So when you figure that you've got Pensacola, Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa Bay, Sarasota, Naples, South Florida, and the mm-hmm. Keys. And if you all want to treat yourself on another adventure, go to Naples. Naples mm-hmm. is really far, far from what it used to be. I mean, it's not just mm-hmm. The Ritz-Carlton food for the rich, but they've got some terrific Italian food. They've got a really good Persian restaurant with a cocktail bar and out on the street. I mean, there's just a lot going everywhere. I found a wonderful restaurant I guess it was last year in Winter Haven.
Oh, wow.
And I have friends from Winter Haven who were stunned, but this guy had been, he was Argentine, and he had worked in Miami, maybe for Michelle Bernstein, but he had, he and his wife, I think she was from Lakeland, they took a little ranch house and were making really pretty stunning food, and making it from scratch is cheeses and pâtés and good stuff.
Nice. So you did choose five places in St. Pete for Golden Spoon Awards. And this includes, you have Golden Spoon winners.
This is 2019.
This is 2019.
Yeah.
You have Hall of Fame winners. And Hall of Fame is when you've been a Golden Spoon winner many times.
Right.
And then the best new restaurants. We have Anata with a Golden Spoon. Balm Avenue Market, best new. And was that before Karma took over?
Yeah, I think
so. Il Retorno, Golden Spoon. Marchand's, Golden Spoon Hall of Fame. And Park Shore Grill, Golden Spoon.
Well, I think, obviously, this year there hasn't been as many new restaurants for the newcomers category. But I think Baba is very sharp, and I'm not sure how long Bacchus has been in operation.
I think they're a little under a year.
I think they're very sharp. They have sardine toast, and sardines are one of the unsung heroes of. Who do you like? What do you think is nifty and new?
Well, not new. We're going to definitely agree with Il Retorno and Anata and Park Shore.
Yes.
Those are three of our favorites out of the five that you picked.
Yeah.
And let's see, new.
Seaworthy.
Yes. Seaworthy and Tierra Verde. It's Jason Ruhe from Brick and Mortar.
Brick and Mortar's chef and owner.
We finally got there about a week or so ago.
Yeah, it was great.
How about Trophy Fish? Do you like Trophy Fish? I think
it's not really new though. Yeah. That's about 2 years.
Yeah. We do like them. The only thing with us is we are Florida people that don't like the heat.
And so, it's too hot to eat there most of the time.
We only go there like in December.
Right. Yeah.
But we did liked it when we've been there. Yes.
And really one other thing that's changed is the incredible revolution behind the bar, and the bar programs are a tribute to I think the skill and the imagination of the people behind the bar, who for years didn't get a second look unless they were costumed inappropriately, but
and now they're all mixologists.
Almost every bar worth its name has at least one great bartender. It has clever specialty drinks and has a back bar full of interesting liquors and call brands. And my particular standard used to be I checked to see how good the rum selection was. And now I've moved on to gin. I don't know what that says.
Nice.
And
now you're in Kevin's territory.
And the other thing that is always a treat for me is the Amaros and the other Italian after dinner drinks or before dinner at times. So
Chris, I'm in downtown St. Pete, and every day I look at the main office for the Tampa Bay Times and Florida Trend right outside my window. And how often do you get to the office?
In the last 6 months, almost never. But generally, I go into the Trend offices a couple of times a month, and largely it gives me a chance to eat around downtown, and I should also say that downtown is an example of, you know, some very smart chains. I think Maple Street Biscuits and Hawkers are just terrific outfits, and they are God love them chains.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they
right.
are right.
Right,
we agree with you on that too. Yeah,
yeah.
So, Chris Sherman from Florida Trend, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much, Chris.
Okay, thank you.
St. Pete is all about local, and this year we celebrate a local legend's 25th anniversary. Roland Oates Market and Cafe was founded in July of 94 by Bert Swain and Larry Schwartz. From the beginning, Roland Oates has made a commitment to provide St. Pete customers with the finest quality organic whole foods, nutritional supplements, and body care products at the most reasonable prices possible. And now they have a South Tampa location too. We go there for many items, but they are the only place that we go to buy our raw probiotics and other supplements. They have the best organic whole food selection in town, and on the flip side of that, they also offer a fantastic selection of wines and an unparalleled selection of local craft beer. Roland Oates has a cafe open daily which offers delicious sandwiches, burgers, soups, salads, bowls, wraps, entrees, and fresh-made smoothies, along with a variety of prepared and packaged take-home meals located in the market itself. Do you pride yourself with supporting local businesses? Well, put your money where your mouth is and get on into Roland Oates today.
Roland Oates St. Pete is located at 2842 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Street North. And in South Tampa, you'll find them at 1021 North MacDill Avenue. Check them out on the web at rolandoates.com.
That's rolandoates.com. And Roland Oates offers online ordering with curbside pickup.
I've said before that I love salad because when I was a kid, my mom made it every night for dinner and I eat it all the time.
I make it a lot of times for you.
You do. You make really good salads too. Yeah. Speaking of salads, this segment is sponsored by Greenstock, which is a chef-driven and ingredient-focused salad wraps fast casual eatery right in the heart of downtown St. Pete. Everything is fresh. Nothing comes out of a can. And you can actually see all the ingredients right in the case. There are even full ears of unshucked corn and those gorgeous-looking Roma tomatoes.
Yes.
And Greenstock's what's for lunch today.
It is.
What'd you get, Lori?
Well, I'm working my way through the you-inspired menu, building my own you-inspired salads.
And they got a lot of really cool ingredients to play with, too.
They do. Today's was delicious. I got the small. You have a choice of small or large. And then you add your ingredients to that. I had the romaine and spinach with cucumbers, tomatoes, beets, edamame, pickled red onions, watermelon radish, wasabi peas, sunflower seeds, bacon, and a miso ginger dressing. And I had it tossed, not chopped.
Right. And it's great that they have that option to make up your own because you're real good at that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You let me try it and it was really good.
It was delicious.
Did you mention the dressing?
I did, the miso ginger.
That one is one of my favorites.
Definitely one of my favorites too, for sure.
Their dressings are so good. So I had the, off the menu, the Mexi Fresh, which is romaine, baby arugula, watermelon radish, corn, jicama, tomatoes, pickled red onion, black beans with a cilantro lime garlic vinaigrette. And I added the protein of cold fried chicken.
Right.
I love the combination of Mexican inspired ingredients. And what I really loved was the dressing. I'm not usually impressed with cilantro lime dressings. I think they're usually too lime forward.
Right.
But this one was garlic forward in the best way possible.
Nice.
And by the way, all of the dressings are made from scratch in-house at Greenstock. So check out Greenstock on the 400 block of Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete. They have contactless ordering and pickup, and they are open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You can also order on their website, which is eatatgreenstock.com.
This is Chris Walker, and you're listening to St. Pete Foodies Podcast.
We have three new items on the website. There's a review of the newly opened Cellar Masters. It's a wine bar and retail shop in the Edge District on the 1000 block of First Avenue North. We also have two exciting news items. St. Pete Meat and Provisions is a new venture from the owners of Il Ritorno and Greenstock with restaurant quality meats and other food items where you order online and have contactless pickup at Greenstock on the 400 block of Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete. We also have an announcement of a new restaurant opening. The owners of Grace Restaurant in Paso Grill Beach, they are opening two Graces on the 6000 block of Central Avenue where the Reading Room used to be. That's right next to Freefall Theater. You can see all of that on stpetersburgfoodies.com. Next week on the podcast, we'll be talking to Janet Keeler. She is an instructor and coordinator for the Food Writing and Photography Certificate Program in the Department of Journalism and Digital Communication at the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg. If you'd like to send us fan mail, hate mail, or have any requests for interviews or restaurant reviews, just send an email to info@stpetersburgfoodies.com.
That's it for this episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks to our guest, Chris Sherman.
And thanks to Greenstock for lunch.
Thanks to our sponsors,
Rollin' Oats,
The Zest Podcast,
Noble Crust,
Buyu Ramen,
and Engine Number 9. Our announcer is Candace Aviles from Meet the Chef and Channel 10 News, and our theme music is provided by the Chris Walker Band.
We'd like to remind you to check out all the latest restaurant reviews, foodies news, top 10 lists, and updated happy hours on stpetersburgfoodies.com.
Please give us a rating and review on whichever app you're using to listen to the show. And remember to share the show with your foodie friends.
Until next time,
may your food be hot
and your bubbly cold.
Do you say the people who order meat well done may get the tougher cuts of meat? Why?
Traditionally, well done eaters get very little respect from the kitchen. We assume that if you order your steak well done, you're really not going to notice if it's the nervy, tendony chunk. You want it incinerated into a hockey puck. We're clearly not going to give you that.
So when you say I want it well done, you're really saying I really
don't. Please give me your lesser cut.
Please give me your lesser cut. Really?
Yeah.